isolation and attention to what he considered more important matters kept Andrew Lewis from hearing much about the increasingly brittle situation around faraway Nacogdoches, or giving much thought to the little he heard about the growing conflict between old settlers and new ones that the Edwards brothers brought in to place upon land others regarded as their own. The fall harvest kept Andrew busy, for he had no rich man's implements, no slaves to help him gather the fruits of his summer's labor, like he had seen on large places downriver. He gathered his corn crop the poor man's way, using a long, sharp knife as he slowly worked along row after row of ripened stalks. He hoisted each canvas bag upon the brown horse's back just before it became too heavy for him to lift alone, toting it up to his log shed for storage. At such a time, he dreamed of acquiring a wagon someday. The produce of his garden likewise required hand labor, his own, for he had no money to hire help. Always before, he and Michael had combined their efforts for those tasks too large or too heavy for one man. But this time, he did his work alone. The old quarrel still stood between them like a patch of briars. Neither knew how to take the first step to cut a path through the thorns without losing some of the Lewis dignity and pride. Of more import was Marie's delivery of her second child. It happened, appropriately, just as the crop harvest began. Andrew kept finding excuses to go to Michael and Marie's cabin to look in upon her, even if it was no more than whittling some sort of toy for little Mordecai. Michael would acknowledge his presence with a strained civility and find business elsewhere. The new neighbor, Mrs. Nathan, came over to provide midwife services. By the look of her, Andrew judged that she would be needing a return of the favor before winter was out. But her condition was no hindrance to her hustling and bustling about, ordering Michael and Andrew to the chores she needed done. A woman of considerable stature herself, she kept worrying aloud about Marie's small size.
I had a cousin once, little bitty woman like Marie, married to a big strapping feller like Michael is. Baby come, it taken after its papa. Too big for such a little woman. Died giving birth, she did. Died hard.
Michael pointed out that this would be Marie's second. She had had no particular difficulty delivering Mordecai. But Mrs. Nathan kept talking about her cousin until she had Michael and Andrew both in a cold sweat. As the ordeal began, Andrew kept water boiling in a pot over coals in the fireplace, while Michael held little Mordecai on his knee and tried to explain to the worried boy what was the matter with his mother and why they needed that bossy woman in the house. Andrew poked nervously at the fire during the interminable wait, thinking of Mrs. Nathan's cousin and the thousand things that could go wrong. The baby's cry lasted but a moment. His mouth dry, Andrew stared intently at Michael and listened hard, fearful.
Must be a boy. Lewis boys don't cry much.
Mrs. Nathan entered the kitchen, wiping her hands on a towel. She held the men in painful suspense a minute, then smiled.
Oh, Michael, she wants you to go in now. She'd like to show you your new daughter.
Michael stared at her as if he did not quite believe.
Daughter? You sure it's not a boy?
After several of my own, I think I can tell the difference.
Andrew slumped, the tension flowing out of him.
Damn Mrs. Nathan's stories.
He wanted to grasp his brother's hand, but waited in vain for a look that might seem an invitation. He took little Mordecai as Michael eased his son down from his knee.
Lewis, girls don't cry much either.
The boy had seen few other children. His had been a world of adults. All the talk had been about his getting a new brother to play with. He didn't understand why he had been given a sister instead.
I don't know what we need her for anyway.
While Michael went in, Andrew held Mordecai.
Now, Mordecai, don't you worry none. See, a sister is just the same as having a brother, except, well, it's different.
What do you mean, different?
Mrs. Nathan was no help.
Whew.
She slumped exhaustedly at the table, drinking parched grain coffee and smiling benignly at Andrew's stumbling efforts. Michael came back into the kitchen presently, his rugged face aglow. Any momentary disappointment had already been put aside.
Marie wants Mordecai to come see the baby. You just as well come too, Andrew, long as you're here.
Marie was drawn and tired, but her black hair was freshly brushed, and her dark eyes were shining as she turned toward the tiny figure lying beside her.
Look, Mordecai, this is your sister.
The boy seemed less than impressed.
She looks kind of old.
Andrew ached to put his arms around Marie. He put them around the boy instead.
Yeah, she'll get younger.
She can't have my bed.
Time she gets big enough to need it, I'll build you a bigger one.
Andrew's anxiety for Marie returned, for she appeared wrung out and frighteningly vulnerable.
Baby looks fine. How about you? You had us scared half to death.
I feel like getting up from here and singing.
Andrew touched her hand, then quickly drew away, but not before he saw a flicker of reaction in her eyes. Michael sat on the edge of the bed, reaching across the baby to hold his wife's other hand. Little Mordecai looked with suspicion upon the new arrival. He crawled up on the side of the bed and drew close to his mother. She hugged him.
It's all right, Mordecai.
Andrew felt like a fifth wheel on a wagon. He withdrew to the door, but paused to look back at the three people, four now, who were most of his world.
It strikes me, Michael, that me and you will be Tennesseans as long as we live, and Marie will always be from Louisiana, but them two little ones, they're born in Texas. What does that make them?
Texicans. They're the starting of a whole new tribe.
Marie was up the next day, getting around far sooner than Andrew thought she should. She took up most of her accustomed tasks, leaving little for Mrs. Nathan. Andrew waited for Michael to register disapproval. When he did not, Andrew admonished her.
Our mom always laid up for a couple, 3 days, taking a rest. You oughtn't be on your feet yet.
Marie acknowledged his concern with a soft smile.
I have been long enough in bed. There's much work to be done.
Oh, that's what Mrs. Nathan came here for.
But she is in a delicate condition.
Marie put an end to the discussion by pointing toward a wooden bucket.
I need some water, Andrew. Would you mind?
Carrying the empty bucket down to the riverbank, Andrew wondered if Marie and Michael ever argued. He had never heard them. He thought it would be interesting sometime, for he couldn't conceive of either giving up to the other. If they were ill-matched in size, they were well-matched in wills. They didn't even have a proper argument over a name for the baby, though they had strong and differing opinions. Michael wanted to name her Patience after his and Andrew's mother in Tennessee. Andrew thought that was a splendid notion, but he didn't interfere. Marie, because of her French-Spanish heritage, was torn between naming her Angeline for a beloved French aunt who had graced Marie's childhood in Natchitoches, but had died in a fever epidemic, and Christina from the Spanish side of her family. They compromised, joining the names and calling the baby Angeline Christina Patience Lewis.
Poor kids have to grow up slump-shouldered carrying the weight of such a name.
Marie kissed the baby on the forehead.
Most Spanish names are much longer.
Michael squared himself to his full 6 feet.
Just so she remembers that her last name is Lewis.
Being around Marie had been a constant reminder to Andrew of the emptiness of his own cabin. Now that she had the baby, the feeling was even more acute. Andrew found that he could abide being by himself only a few days at a time. Then he had to ride down to Michael and Marie's place, ignoring Michael's cool and calculated silence for a chance to talk with Marie a little and bounce the boy Mordecai on his knee. He would watch with a helpless hunger as Marie moved about the cabin, cooking supper in the fireplace, caressing her new daughter. He had long sensed that Marie understood how he felt about her. In her relationship with him, there was always a sisterly affection, but there was also a vague uneasiness, an invisible line which she had drawn and over which he dared not step. Her dark eyes would silently tell him when he came dangerously near that line, and he would back away. The baby was about 3 weeks old when Marie broached a subject she had mentioned several times before. Michael was out at the shed milking the cow. Marie watched Andrew stack an armload of freshly cut wood beside the fireplace, then motioned for him to take a chair.
"But I've got more wood that needs to be fetched in."
Marie nodded again toward the chair, trouble in her eyes. Andrew sat. Marie pulled up another chair and stared at him for a silent moment.
"You'll very soon be finished with the harvest. There will not be much for you to do in the winter except trap, and pelts will bring but little money. I think a good idea would be for you to go away for a while, see something different. Go visit Nacogdoches or Natchitoches."
Andrew suspected what she was working up to. They would not be the first time.
"You want me to bring home a wife?"
"I did not say that, but if it be in God's plan, why not?"
If he traveled 3,000 miles, he would not find a woman who would measure up to Marie. He would never be free to tell her that, not in words, but she could read it in his eyes if she so chose.
"I got mighty little to offer. It's a hard life for a woman out here so far from the settlements."
"It is a good life. I am happy. Michael is happy. This country will grow, and our children will grow with it. Find the right woman, Andrew, and she will be happy too. You should have your own family. You should be raising your own sons of Texas."
Andrew frowned. He was pretty sure he could read her thoughts, that if he had a woman of his own, perhaps he would be less drawn to Marie. Perhaps the awkwardness they felt toward each other would disappear. With it, perhaps, would go the barrier that had arisen between him and Michael. But he was not ready.
"Yeah, sometime, maybe. Not yet."
The trouble was strong in Marie's eyes. He thought they might even hold a touch of fear.
"There is something else. Michael is restless again. He says nothing, but he stares to the west with that look from his father. One day he will not be able to stop himself, and he will ride away to see what is out there. If he knows you will be here to watch over us, he will feel free to go."
Andrew nodded, thinking ahead of her.
"And if I was gone, he'd have no choice except to stay."
"Please, Andrew. He might die out there as your father did. So far away that not even God would know where he was. I do not want him to go. But he will, if you do not."
Andrew rubbed his rough hands together and tried in vain to think of a good argument. It was useless. He would walk barefoot across a bed of hot coals if Marie should ask him to.
"I remember your old daddy, merchant to the core. He could sell an ox yoke to a mule skinner. Looks like he raised his daughter the same way."
Michael returned from the cow pen, fresh milk steaming in the wooden bucket. Marie gave Andrew no choice to equivocate.
"Andrew is going to make a trip. He is going back east to find a wife."
The warmth of embarrassment rushed to Andrew's face.
"I'm just going to visit around a while is all."
Michael set the bucket on the floor. Andrew saw momentary disappointment in his brother's blue eyes. Michael was realizing that Andrew's absence would force him to give up any notion of exploring, at least for now. The disappointment passed after a bit. Michael did not speak directly to Andrew. He seldom did these days.
"I've been telling him all along that he needs somebody to share that cabin. Glad he's finally decided to listen to me."
Andrew glanced at Marie. She smiled with the guileless face of an angel come to earth.
"I always listen to good advice."
Andrew approached the journey without relish, feeling that the decision was not his own. He had been pressured into it. He kept putting it off until winter's cool breath was in the morning air. One day, Michael came to him.
"If you ain't going, then I think I'll make a little ride out west a ways. There's some country I've been wanting to take a look at."
"I was figuring on leaving tomorrow.
He packed the necessaries into a canvas bag and hung them off the saddle, his blankets tied behind the cantle. The brown horse looked dwarfed beneath its burden, but it was more bulk than weight. Andrew gently pinched the baby's fingers, then hugged little Mordecai and Marie. Michael watched him soberly and in silence.
How far will you go?
I ain't figured for sure. Expect I'll make a turnover by Nacogdoches and maybe as far as Natchitoches.
You could go all the way back to Tennessee, see Mama and them.
Yeah, not until we can all go together and let Mama meet her grandchildren.
There will be some of yours by that time, perhaps.
You all are expecting an awful lot from me. I tell you, I ain't looking for a wife. I'll be coming back by myself.
If you see my mother and father, tell them... well, you know what to tell them.
I'll tell them you're happy. That'd be no lie.
Andrew swung up on the brown horse. He started to pull away, but glanced back.
I'll be coming home by myself.
He set out downriver, feeling as if he were being sent on a fool's errand. He had about as much business making this trip as a mule had going to a dance. He stopped for a short visit at the Willett place, where he was pleased to see young Daniel looking fit and happy and none the worse for his experience with the Indians. He didn't tarry long, because the memory of old man Lige Willett hung over him like a cloud. Andrew stopped next at the Nathan's new cabin. Mrs. Nathan, her stomach pushing out more and more noticeably, wanted to know all about Marie and the baby. And she had advice for Andrew.
While you're a-traveling, it sure wouldn't hurt you none to keep your eyes open for a likely young woman. There's bound to be one somewhere just a-waiting for an eligible young bachelor like yourself to come along.
Andrew figured she'd been talking to Marie. Women saw romance in everything, seemed like. Miles Nathan took a practical view of the matter.
Makes good business sense to me. Austin'd give you a right smart, bigger grant of land if you used to come back harnessed up double.
I'm just going to visit some old friends. Finding me a life companion's never once crossed my mind.
Be sure and sample her cooking first. Beauty fades away.
Nathan glanced uneasily at his wife.
But good cooking is a joy forever.
That kind of joy, at least, was in plentiful supply around the Nathan place. He noticed that Walker Younce was there, and Walker put away a hearty meal. But Andrew doubted that food was Walker's primary reason for coming. He was hanging on the girl Birdie's every word, every flutter of her eyelashes. Andrew wondered where Joe Smith was. He was not paying adequate attention to his interests if he was letting Walker steal a march on him. Departing after eating more than good judgment would have suggested, Andrew carried some of the leavings at Mrs. Nathan's insistence, so he could make another meal or two out of it along the trail. She stood in front of her cabin.
Remember what I told you about my cousin? Find yourself a good, sturdy woman that won't have any trouble bearing babies.
Andrew seriously considered bypassing San Felipe, the headquarters of Austin's colony. He figured he would probably get more matrimonial advice there. Some of it, like as not, from Stephen Austin, still a bachelor himself, and therefore probably an expert on someone else's need for a helpmate. Rumor was that Austin had seriously planned marriage himself to a likely young lady, but had been too busy with his colony to invest the time and energy necessary to a successful courtship. On reflection, Andrew decided a visit to San Felipe might be time well spent before he started the northward leg of the trip. Isolated at his and Michael's farms, he had heard but little of recent events. Nacogdoches and Natchitoches could both have burned to the ground or been wiped out by a fever epidemic without his knowing anything of it. He was half surprised to find Austin in San Felipe. The impresario was gone from the town much of the time, traveling often to San Antonio de Bar and even as far as Mexico City on business for his colony. The wear was showing, for he appeared to have aged 10 or 15 years. His was a pace Andrew didn't envy. It was probably easier being a farmer. He found Austin distracted, seeming to pay little attention until Andrew mentioned that he planned to travel north to Nacogdoches, Austin's eyebrows went up.
Are you aware of the explosive situation that's developed there?
No.
The entire region around Nacogdoches seems on the brink of a revolt. Hayden Edwards and his brother have tried to force old settlers as well as recent squatters from their land and turn it over to their own colonists. There's been a great deal of resistance and protest. Now the Mexican government has canceled the Edwards grant and ordered him to leave Texas. The last word I have is that he's resisting. He's even been recruiting Americans to join him and hold his colony by force, if necessary.
I bet the Mexican government ain't none too pleased about that.
The situation reinforces those Mexicans who have opposed the American colonies. If it goes to an extreme, it could result in the eviction of all of us from Texas.
You got lots of friends in Mexico City. You can make them see that Edwards and his kind don't represent most of us.
I try, but it may require us to do more than talk. It may require our joining the Mexican government and moving against the Edwards brothers.
Americans against Americans. The thought brought a bitter taste to Andrew's mouth.
That won't set well with a lot of folks.
Neither would our eviction.
Andrew had gained the impression that those in Mexico who opposed allowing Americans into Texas were a minority voice, that a majority saw the American colonists as a stabilizing influence in a land but thinly settled and eternally subject to the terrors of Indian depredation. He had not given serious thought to what he would do, or what Michael would do, if anybody were to try to force them off their land. Not even the government of Mexico.
Our roots are too deep now, we couldn't leave.
When you remove a tree from a field, you don't dig it up by the roots. You simply chop it down. You've never seen anything of the Mexican army except a few scattered troops. You've never seen it as I have, deep in the interior of the country.
Is it big enough to drive us out?
More than that. It's big enough to chop us to the ground and leave us lying in pieces. All it needs is the will and a strong leader who hates Americans.
Andrew could see himself and Michael standing shoulder to shoulder in defense of their land and being cut down like wheat under a scythe.
Anything I can do to help?
I receive only sketchy and contradictory reports. You could quietly look around Nacogdoches and determine the true situation. That would help me decide upon our best course.
For the first time, Andrew began to see a broader purpose in his journey, beyond pacifying his brother and sister-in-law and preventing Michael from going on the roam. This was a more sensible mission than looking for a wife.
My fervent hope is that the Edwards brothers will recognize their position as untenable and simply leave Texas. That would save all of us some grief.
Andrew remembered his brief meeting with Benjamin Edwards. He had not been impressed.
Yeah, they're probably already gone.
Let us hope so. That'd be the best news you could send me. And while you're there...
You too!
Would that I had the time myself. There's not much comfort in this life for a bachelor.
Because Nacogdoches had become a gateway into Texas for American immigrants traveling overland, Andrew found the trail considerably better marked and worn than the last time he had ridden it. He met several travelers, occasionally one or two, but more often small family groups, all wanting to visit a while and ask questions about Austin's colony or others in the Texas interior. Andrew was glad to oblige, for he had little opportunity to see many people beyond his own small circle. And most of these immigrants brought real coffee. He took the opportunity to ask them what they had seen or heard in Nacogdoches. The only agreement he found was that trouble was astir. What kind and whose responsibility it was varied with the teller of the story. He remembered that the limited rural settlement in the Nacogdoches region, aside from scattered illegal squatters, was within a relatively short distance of the old Spanish fort town. The old Spanish royalist government had distrusted its citizens and actively discouraged settlement in isolated regions away from official scrutiny. That Mexico had finally turned to revolution and won its freedom from Spain was proof that the official misgivings had been well-founded. He sensed that he was approaching Nacogdoches when he saw a dim trail leading off the main trace, meandering into the tall pines whose thick foliage sometimes blocked the sky from view. He followed it and came to a small farm. It was deserted, A few abandoned chickens, wily enough not to be caught by predators, scratched for food around and amid the gray ashes and blackened ruins of a log cabin. A couple of domestic hogs came out of a flattened log pen and waited to be fed.
What happened to your people?
Whatever, they had obviously departed in a hurry to have left even this little. People in Texas wasted not of the might they had, for want was always close at hand. Vaguely disturbed, he returned to the main trace and came after a while to another trail which circled around a dense piney wood and out of sight. He realized he was probably too far from Nacogdoches to reach there by night. Clouds boiling up from the east threatened a cold and rainy night. If he could find a farm and some friendly folks, he might at least sleep on a porch or under a shed in the dry. He set the brown horse upon the track and in a few minutes was pleased to see a reasonably new cabin of logs, this one still standing. Livestock pens and a shed sat out beyond the cabin, and a small field beyond that, reaching to the edge of a pine forest so thick he couldn't see 20 feet into it.
Brown horse, you may even get a little hay tonight.
He saw a milk cow inside the pen, though the gate stood open. She was eating hay someone evidently had pitched onto the ground for her from a fenced-off stack just out of her reach. As at the other place, chickens scratched around the yard. But here he could see grain lying on the ground. Someone had just fed them.
Hello, the house!
He saw no sign that anyone was around. That seemed odd, the chickens and the cow having just been given fresh feed. The door stood half open, but no one moved. He dismounted, looped his reins around a post, and walked up to the door.
Anybody at home?
Andrew looked back over his shoulder toward the shed, puzzled.
Well, I'm coming in.
He pushed the door the rest of the way open. He saw a quick movement. In a dark corner, a girl crouched, eyes wide with fright. She covered her mouth with her hands. He raised his arms as a sign that he meant no harm.
Don't be scared. I didn't come to hurt you.
His eyes accustomed themselves to the darkness of the cabin, and he realized the girl was Mexican. She still crouched against the wall, her eyes big and dark and frightened like those of a small rabbit caught in a corner. For a fleeting moment, she reminded him of Marie. Not for all the world would he willingly see Marie frightened this way. He began backing toward the door. He spoke using the little Spanish that he knew.
It will be all right. I am leaving.
Something poked hard against the middle of his back.
You will not leave yet. Raise your hands.
Andrew felt the breath go out of him. Even before he turned, he knew he would be facing a rifle. And holding the rifle was a young Mexican whose black eyes glittered with threat.
You do not need that rifle. I am not here to hurt anyone.
And you will not. Not tonight. You are my prisoner.
Andrew chilled as he read desperation in the young Mexican's black eyes. A frightened man might squeeze the trigger without intending to. Andrew had to ponder his Spanish, for he had never used it enough that it came without an effort.
I am your prisoner, if you say so. But I am not your enemy. Turn your rifle away from me, por favor.
The young man seemed to consider the proposition, but Andrew could almost smell the fear emanating from him.
Careful, Carlos. Careful.
Andrew's arms began to ache from holding them high.
I have to let my arms down. I will do it slowly.
Very slowly. And back away from me a little.
The rifleman took a backward step of his own, far enough that Andrew couldn't easily grab the weapon. Andrew had no such foolish intention. It would probably get him killed.
I am just a traveler. I mean no one any harm.
Carlos seemed to want to believe him, but distrust was not easily put aside. The girl kept her back to the rough log wall, far beyond Andrew's reach.
Where do you come from?
San Felipe de Austin.
You swear you do not come from the Hermanos Edwards?
I do not know the Edwards brothers.
That was not entirely true. Benjamin Edwards had visited briefly at Andrew's farm some months ago, but it was no great stretch of the truth to say that he didn't know him.
I am from Austin's colony.
Carlos stared hard, as if trying to see beyond Andrew's eyes and into his soul. The girl moved cautiously in a broad circle, trying to inch closer to Carlos while remaining well beyond Andrew's reach. Her first fear had eased, but her eyes remained suspicious.
What do you think, Petra?
He might be telling the truth. I do not want you to kill him.
Killing him might be the safest.
No. If he is one of them, they would stay after you like wolves until you are dead. Perhaps until we all are dead. And if he is not one of them, the Father Dios would condemn us both.
If you are not one of them, why do you come into this cabin like a thief?
A thief would not shout 3 or 4 times asking if anyone is here. And those people you are afraid of, I do not believe that they would either.
He did call out. You must have heard him.
Look, my name is Andrew Lewis. I only wanted a dry place to sleep tonight.
After this hostile encounter, he would as soon sleep in the rain. The young man seemed almost convinced.
Do you know anyone who would speak for you?
Andrew had spent no time around Nacogdoches. He knew of but one man.
Lieutenant Alessandro Zaragoza.
That brought a flicker of recognition to the young man's eyes.
And Eli Pleasant. Eli lives on the other side of Sabine, but he trades in Tejas a lot.
You know the old man Pleasant?
I do.
Andrew wondered if he had helped or hurt himself. Eli had many friends on the Mexican side of the Sabine River, but his various activities had left him enemies, too. The girl moved closer, studying Andrew intently. He tried not to blink. She might take that for a sign he was lying.
The old man Pleasant has been good to us, Carlos.
In the gloom of the corner, where he could see little detail except her dark, fearful eyes, she had looked considerably like Marie. The light was better where she stood now. Andrew saw that the resemblance had been more than superficial. Petra was slight, like Marie, and her animated black eyes were much the same. Her complexion was a bit darker, more olive than Marie's. He felt ashamed that he had given her a fright. He would not have wanted anyone to frighten Marie this way. The tension began to drain from him, for he perceived in Carlos's eyes that the danger had passed. The rifle barrel sagged, pointing toward the hard-packed dirt floor.
I take you at your word that you are a friend of Pleasant.
Andrew tried to smile, but the tension had not drained that much. He raised his hand to chest level.
I have known him since I was that tall. I have not seen him in a few months.
No one sees Pleasant unless he wishes to be seen. That is why he has lived to become an old man.
Andrew felt weakness in his knees after looking into that rifle barrel. He slumped into a rough-hewn chair. It struck him that the cabin had largely been stripped. He saw no pots, no pans, no utensils on a rough shelf over the table. A wooden bed frame had no blankets, no goatskin, no cornhusk pad. It was getting on towards supper time, but the fireplace was cold.
They must have looted this place.
The girl shook her pretty head.
They would have. This was our own doing, to save all we could from the thieves. They would take our land and everything. But our father lived and died on this land, and our grandfather. The king gave it to them. Now come those American filibusters who say it is theirs.
Andrew could not help staring, for she looked so much like Marie.
I heard in San Felipe that the Mexican government ordered the Edwards brothers to leave Tejas.
The government is far away.
It has soldiers in Nacogdoches.
There are too few against so many. So we band together in groups to protect ourselves and wait until the government does something, if it does something.
Andrew glanced from the man to the girl and back.
You do not look like a very large group to me, just you and your wife.
My sister. This place is mine. We come here only to feed the chickens and the animals I could not take with me. Then we return to our family and our friends.
Where are they?
Suspicion flared again in the young man's eyes. He didn't answer.
It is just as well that I do not know. South of here I saw a farmhouse burned.
The land does not burn. It will still be ours when all these land-stealing extra herros are gone.
Andrew warmed to the spirit in her voice, the angry fire in her eyes. It was what he would have expected from Marie. He wanted to distress her no longer.
If you are finished with me, I will be on my way.
To where?
To Nacogdoches.
And what would you do there?
See what is happening, then report back to Stephen Austin. He is concerned.
Do you think he would help us?
He wants no trouble with the Mexican government. I believe he will help you if he can.
Andrew decided it was time to be riding before Carlos took it in his head to disbelieve him again.
You would be caught in the rain. Go with us. It is not far.
Carlos gave her a quick and questioning glance.
I want to believe him. There may be someone who will know him and can say if he tells the truth. The old man Pleasant was with us last night.
Eli, I would ride far to see him.
Carlos considered for a long moment before nodding.
All the work is finished here. We can leave now.
At dusk, they broke out of the timber and came to a farm, a small open place in the midst of a dense pine forest. It was typical of many old Mexican farms he had seen in Texas. Limited, providing for subsistence, but nothing more. These were a people traditionally poor, used to little and asking little more of life than enough to eat and a place to live. Central to the farm was a cabin, the oldest part small and darkened with age. Additions had been made periodically, evidently to accommodate a growing family. Andrew saw a set of log corrals, the timber dark and sagging with its years, and a couple of sheds, all built of material cut and dragged from the woods, which encroached upon the farm on all but one side and darkly threatened to overwhelm it. He counted three wagons, which he assumed belonged to refugees. The place had some appearance of a military camp, with several tents clustered around the cabin. He counted three Mexican-style picket jacales, evidently put up to provide temporary shelter against the winter for some of the people banded together here. A couple of the women cooked over outdoor fires. A light breeze drifted the pleasant aroma of pine smoke toward him, reminding him that he had eaten but little. From things Carlos and Petra had told him on the way, he knew Petra shared the old cabin with her mother, the Moreno family matriarch, and brothers and a sister younger than Carlos. Their father had been murdered by a Spanish loyalist officer many years ago, before Mexican independence. The rest of the people here, aside from the Morenos, included old Mexican settlers and some recent American squatters assembled for mutual protection against a common threat. Their situation reminded him of an occasion during his Tennessee boyhood, when settlers had massed in the face of an Indian danger. He remembered that he had worried more about the hazard of so many guns in the hands of careless people than about the Indians. The only casualty he recalled was a convivial leather stocking, friend of his father Mordecai, who imbibed freely of corn whiskey and shot off his toe. Andrew looked back over his shoulder toward the storm cloud and wondered if there was shelter enough for all these people to sleep dry. If they didn't, he couldn't ask to. A tall, heavy-shouldered American of perhaps 40 strode forward to meet the three riders. He carried no rifle, but his huge hands looked strong enough to provide a considerable persuasion. Andrew wondered if he might be a blacksmith by trade.
Who you brought with you, Carlos?
He says he is from the Austin colony at San Felipe. He says he knows the old man Pleasant. We wanted to see if Pleasant will speak for him.
Eli is gone. He rode to Nacogdoches to see what's happening there.
The man's dark gray eyes fastened upon Andrew with a measure of hostility.
What's your name?
Andrew Lewis. Carlos has the right of it. I've got a farm out west to San Felipe.
Maybe. Or maybe you're hoping to get a farm out west to Nacogdoches by working for Hayden Edwards and his bunch. You ever know an old feller called Tolliver Beard?
The name sounded vaguely familiar, but Andrew couldn't remember why.
Not that I can recall.
The man looked back over his shoulder and jerked his head. Another, who resembled him enough to be his brother, walked out carrying a rifle.
You'll pardon us if we don't quite trust you to be telling us the gospel truth. We've been lied to by several that were slicker than goose grease. Wouldn't be the first time that Beard has tried to send a spy into this camp.
The second man raised the rifle. He didn't point it directly at Andrew, but was close enough.
I've got nothing to give you but my word. I can see that ain't enough. So I'll trouble you folks no longer. I'll just be on my way.
The big man quickly stepped forward, grabbing Andrew's reins up close to the brown horse's mouth.
You've seen enough to have a good idea how many of us there is. Beard and the Edwards brothers would probably be tickled to know that. If you was to leave here, you just might go and tell him.
The man with the rifle moved in and motioned for Andrew to dismount. The muzzle now was aimed at Andrew's chest, but Andrew didn't move from the saddle. It was in his mind that on horseback, he still had a chance to cut and run. Afoot, he would be helpless.
Please! We think he tells the truth.
Petra looked frightened, indication enough to Andrew that he also had reason to be. These people had been pushed hard, and they were strongly inclined to push back.
We did not bring him here to be killed.
You should not have brought him here at all. You have put this whole camp at risk.
Not as big a risk as mine. Why don't we just leave everything the way it is till old Eli gets back?
We have no idea how long that might be. Eli does what he wants to when he wants to. We may not see him for a week.
Ain't you gonna shoot him?
Andrew thought he knew the voice. He wished he did not.
Shooting a man don't come easy.
Depends. With some, it ain't hard at all.
The speaker stepped out of the shed's gloom and into the fading light of evening, his hands in his pockets. Andrew felt a mixture of apprehension and shame, as if he had foolishly stumbled into an enemy's camp.
Isaac Blackwood.
What do you reckon, Andrew Lewis? Reckon I ought to tell him to go ahead and shoot you?
Wouldn't surprise me if you did, Isaac. Wouldn't surprise me if your brother Finnis shot me himself.
The big man glanced at Isaac in surprise.
You know him?
Ever since back in Tennessee.
Andrew was not sure that such a statement from a Blackwood would be accepted as a recommendation. Not if these people knew much about the Blackwoods.
We never was friends.
Isaac gave Andrew a long moment's contemplation.
Looks like you need a friend now, Andrew. Even if it's just me.
I'd be obliged if you tell them who I am.
Isaac took his time, letting him stew.
What Andrew told you is the truth. He's got a farm in Austin's colony. Me and my brothers, we've been there.
Isaac looked straight into Andrew's eyes without blinking.
Him and his brother Michael, they run us off. Said they'd shoot us if ever we come back.
The man who held the rifle let it sag to arm's length. The big man turned loose of Andrew's reins.
I'm surprised that you'd speak up for him then.
Surprises me a little too. But I guess in a time like this, all us Tennesseans gotta stick together.
Andrew thought of his brother Michael and how it would gravel him to learn that the Lewises owed a debt of gratitude to a Blackwood. He saw the big man wipe cold sweat from his forehead and realized the quandary he had been in. Andrew had sweated some himself.
Yeah.
He dismounted from the brown and forced himself to extend his hand.
No hard feelings.
The big man stuck his hand out.
And none with me. Name's Simon Wells. Hope you'll pardon us for being suspicious, but that Edwards bunch burned out me and my family and my brother. If the Morenos hadn't taken everybody in, we'd all of us be in a bad fix.
Gratitude toward Isaac Blackwood did not lessen Andrew's misgivings. He couldn't believe the Blackwoods had any land to lose.
What are y'all doing here, Isaac?
Isaac's eyes were steady. He did not give an inch.
We found us a little place. Me and Finnis and Luke. That bunch out of Nacogdoches, they come up on a cabin while me and Luke was off hunting. They taken Finnis and Nellie by surprise. Time me and Luke seen the smoke and come running, deed had been done. So we come here and joined up with these other folks that had been mistreated the same way.
Andrew wondered who Nellie was.
I reckon I owe you, Isaac.
I reckon you do. But I ain't decided what you owe me. I'll think of something.
Andrew had no doubt of that. He turned to the Mexican brother and sister who had brought him here.
It is all right now. This man knows me.
You are friends?
Andrew suspected she had already formed an opinion of the Blackwoods.
Not friends, but we know each other.
She gave him a fleeting smile that looked like Marie's.
I'm glad you are not friends. That one seems not too bad. But his brothers?
Isaac stared at the pair blankly. He didn't speak Spanish. Andrew warmed to her. For a moment, she was not a stranger named Petra. She was Marie. Marie. Andrew sat on the cabin porch, listening to Simon Wells recount the settlers' grievances against the Edwards brothers, but his primary attention was not with Wells. He watched the girl Petra move about the cabin, helping clean up after a simple family meal to which she and her mother had invited Andrew. He had shared it with Petra, Carlos and his wife, two younger brothers named Ramon and Felipe, a sister named Juanita, and the old senora. The Moreno family had eked out a living in the region for generations, farming in a small way, raising a few cattle. The oppressive final years of the Spanish government had been a brutal trial, taking the life of Petra's father, forcing her brothers to assume the burdens of manhood years too early. Many of their relatives had been driven into exile in Louisiana because of their real or imagined opposition to the crown. To have endured all that, only to be subjected again now to possible loss of their venerable land claims, had been a cross they were unwilling to bear without stiff resistance.
We can't rightly blame the Edwards brothers for all of it. Way I've been told, Hayden Edwards spent a lot of time and money and work down in Mexico earning the right to bring settlers into this part of the country. But the Mexican government is new and big and clumsy. One part ain't got the first notion of what another part is up to. One side grants rights and another takes them away. They don't trust each other. And it's sure as hell they don't trust Americans.
Andrew could hear Petra and her family in the cabin, speaking Spanish among themselves. Some of the talk was so rapid that its meaning was lost on him. He pointed his chin toward the door.
Well, there's the biggest trouble of all. We don't understand one another. Us Americans, we come out of a different upbringing. We get thrown together with the Mexican people, and all anybody can see, them or us, is the differences. Probably a mistake for us to have come into their country in the first place.
But we're here now. This is our home too. And we ain't no ways about to leave.
Wells stopped talking. He seemed to wait for Andrew to make some comment, but Andrew was silent, watching through the door. Wells turned to see Petra kneeling before the fireplace, poking up a blaze.
There's good folks amongst these Mexicans, even if we don't always understand each other. Some don't hurt the eyes none either.
Andrew felt like a little boy caught at mischief.
She just reminds me of somebody is all.
You a bachelor, Lewis?
Never had a chance to be otherwise. Living out way past the settlements don't allow for much social life.
My wife's Louisiana French. But if I was a young bachelor in Texas, I might be looking to marry a likely Mexican girl. It'd set a man up better with the government.
Yeah, I'd be more concerned about how I'd set up with the girl.
But if you had the girl and the government both feeling generous towards you, it'd be like a double patch on your britches, wouldn't you say?
Petra rose and turned, her eyes catching Andrew looking at her. She smiled self-consciously and turned away quickly. His face warmed. Wells studied him.
She was scared to death that me and my brother was fixing to shoot you.
Same idea crossed my mind.
We wouldn't have. That was all bluff. I had a feeling she'd have walked in front of the rifle to stop us.
Why?
I ain't been married but 20 years, and that ain't near long enough to figure them out. But I'd guess she's took a liking to you.
She don't talk English, and my Spanish is barely passable.
There's worse things in this world than having a woman that can't talk to you.
Yeah, I didn't come here looking for a wife.
I wasn't either when I met mine. But a man that don't grab a good opportunity when he sees one is liable to sleep in a bachelor's bed the rest of his life. It can get god-awful cold here in the wintertime. Yeah.
Andrew pushed to his feet. He removed his hat and stepped into the doorway. Petra smiled Marie's smile and watched him with Marie's dark eyes.
I am grateful for the good supper. Now I'll be saying goodnight.
But you will stay until the old man Pleasant comes back?
No, I'll be going back to Nacogdoches in the morning. Austin will be waiting to hear from me.
Petra's smile left her.
We thought you might remain with us for a while.
I wish I could. It would be a great pleasure.
At least you will visit us on your way back to San Felipe?
I will look forward to it.
Petra started to extend her hand, glanced uneasily at her watching mother, and drew it back, clasping both hands at her waist.
As we will.
Andrew stepped backward onto the porch, nearly stumbling over a rough-cut board.
Oh.
Careful, Lewis, or you'll lose your balance.
Andrew could have told him, but he already had. He hoped the storm cloud might go around, but it didn't. The thunder became louder, and lightning flashes told him he'd better hunt for a dry place to sleep. He found the first shed already sheltering all the men who could crowd beneath it. He dreaded the second because he had seen Isaac and Luke there. But he saw no choice other than to bed down in the rain. Isaac watched him passively as Andrew brought in his blanket and sought out a place on the ground not already taken.
Careful! You might get contaminated, breathing the same air as us Blackwoods.
Andrew frowned. He saw only Isaac and Luke.
Where's Finnis?
Andrew thought it a good idea to know the whereabouts of all three. Isaac jabbed his thumb in the direction of a canvas-covered wagon near the shed.
Him and Nellie, they got their own accommodations.
Andrew had seen Nellie, an amply fleshed girl who did not seem to have all of her buttons sewed on tight.
Where'd y'all manage to steal a wagon?
Luke took offense and stepped menacingly toward Andrew, but Isaac caught his brother's arm and pulled him back.
You Lewises always did look for the worst. We figured we had the wagon come to us. Them fellas that burned us out, some of them was traveling by wagon. We convinced them it'd be good for their health to walk back to Nacogdoches.
I can see a certain justice in that.
Glad we can agree on something.
Andrew was a long time going to sleep. He had little concern about Isaac, but it was worrisome lying so near Luke, who had never been known for good sense. The grunts and groans that emanated from the wagon were disturbing, to say the least of it. After a time, Andrew looked to Isaac.
Don't Finnis know everybody hears, or does he just not give a damn?
I hope you don't have any notions about making them stop. You'd have to fight Nellie as well as Finnis.
Andrew turned over in his blankets and tried to block the couple from his consciousness. But they made his thoughts drift unwillingly to the girl Petra. And sleep was as elusive as a doe in the woods.